Welcome to New Thinking for a New World, a Tilburg Foundation podcast. I am Alan Stoga, your host. Each week, I bring you conversations with people who think differently about the great issues that are shaping our world. Geopolitics, disruptive tech, mass migration, the changing climate, culture wars, all of it is grist for our mill. I hope you enjoy listening. I also hope you will let me know what you think and that you join the conversation at tilburgfoundation.org. And now for today's episode of New Thinking for a New World.
The brutal Hamas attacks on October 7th, 2023, kickstarted a new cycle of widespread death and destruction that continues today. Countless lives lost, shattered, or irrevocably altered. Of course, mostly Palestinian, but also Israeli. Today, Gaza looks like Stalingrad or maybe Tokyo after the firebombing. Even Donald Trump is right about some things, as when he says that it's impossible to imagine how life can go on under such circumstances. Indeed, it's easier to imagine how roads or houses or markets can be rebuilt than how people, Palestinians as well as Israelis, will deal with the scar tissue. What will linger when the fighting finally stops and some kind of weird new normal begins to develop? Can the hate, despair, fear, and insecurity that caused the past 18 months and has been exponentially compounded during that time ever dissipate? What will today's young boys and girls be like 10 years from now? Are they condemned to new cycles of rinse and repeat violence? I can't pretend that anyone really can answer questions like that. That's probably why what passes for political leaders in the region, in the United States, in Europe, want to talk about governance or reconstruction or peacekeeping, and above all, this plan and that plan, anything but about people. So today I've invited two guests to talk about people. Francesco Borri, who has been with us previously, is an Italian journalist who lives in Jenin, which I think helps give her reporting a totally different insight into what people are actually thinking. Gershon Baskin is an Israeli political activist and commentator with deep empathy for Palestinians and an even deeper commitment to finding ways for people to live together. Welcome to New Thinking for a New World.
Grazie.
Thank you.
Let's start with some ground truths. Francesca, I can't imagine what life is like for Palestinians in the West Bank or in Gaza. We've all seen the photographs. You and Gershon know the realities. How do people survive?
I would say both in Gaza and the West Bank, Palestinians are basically trying to leave. That's the truth, the unreported truth. Trying to leave and actually planning to leave. I mean, it's not just an idea. Palestinians are trying, you know, their best to leave wherever they can. Even just, you know, moving to Amman in Jordan and then from Amman they will see. And this is especially clear in the West Bank. Everybody wants to leave and everything is on sale, especially north of Ramallah, Nablus, Jenin, Tulkarem, where, you know, the area really under attack. There is deep uncertainty and no leadership. And that's why Palestinians basically, they think they have no choice. And there is not, you know, when it comes to feelings, it's not about hatred. Or I would say that the dominant feeling is outrage for now. Outrage at the world, I mean, not just at Israel. For Israel, Palestinians view Israelis so lost. Not only politically lost, but morally lost, that they're not even talking so much of Israel, you know? There's more outrage at the world, at us, Europe, United States, even Arab countries, you know? For Israelis, it's like for Palestinians, Israelis are not even worth, you know, feelings anymore. But again, I mean, Palestinians are just thinking how to survive, you know, and basically where to move.
Gershon, what's it like in Israel?
I think that since October 7th, 2023, Israel is a very sad country. We're living in trauma, and most of Israeli society has not passed on to October 8th. We're still living the tragedy of October 7th. And that will be the reality of Israel until all the hostages come home. That will be the beginning of the period where we can talk about post-trauma and not even the trauma that we're living. And there's still 59 hostages left in Gaza. It's believed that somewhere around 24 or 25 of them are alive. We don't know the exact number. But Israel is a society which is conflicted, challenged every single day by a government that does not enjoy a majority of support of the people. And the government is trying to continually avoid responsibility for what happened on October 7th and what led to it and the dysfunctional nature of the government since then. And the country is struggling because the country wants a national commission of inquiry headed by a Supreme Court judge to determine what led to October 7th, what happened October 7th, what happened afterwards. And Netanyahu, our prime minister, refuses that. The majority of Israelis, between 70-80% of Israelis, want a deal made that would lead to all the hostages coming home, which means an end of the war, an Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. But we have a government which is threatening to go back to war. And this is very much because people have bought into the idea that if Hamas remains in Gaza in any form, we can't end the war. We can't withdraw from Gaza, not realizing that Hamas has been badly damaged. Gaza is destroyed. 2 million people are homeless. Hamas even says they don't want to govern anymore. And the big question is, will they give up their arms to anyone? Can there be a legitimate form of Palestinian governance in Gaza that can take control and have support from the people on the ground? Because the people in Gaza don't support Hamas anymore, that's for sure.
So let me stay there a minute, because I want to come back to morning afters and come back to plans and come back to all of that, because I really want to get your sense of how people are actually thinking about it. And you both have started that. But to stay with Israel for just a second, before October 7th, you know better than I, Israeli society was deeply split. There were demonstrations, there were protests, there was all sorts of political activism and political action. The war cauterized that. Did it change it? Do you think the underlying realities of Israeli society pre-October 2023, once, as you just said, the hostages are back, once you get beyond active war fighting, whenever that is, put that aside, do those fundamental questions inside Israel about who and what Israel is come back?
Look, I think that we had an unprecedented 40 weeks of consecutive, continual protest against the government's attempt to undo our independent judicial system. We have seen a weakening of Israeli democracy over years. We no longer have an independent legislative branch of government. It's controlled entirely by the executive. We have seen Netanyahu adopt the dictatorial tendencies of some of his top allies, like Hungary and other countries that have moved in that direction, and now the alliance between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. But Israel after October 7th is not the same as Israel before October 7th. And the trauma experienced in the society has changed the society. You know, many people think that the result of it is a growing hatred and despair and fear of Arabs in general, Palestinians in particular, and that pushes the idea that Israel will ever live in peace further and further away. But I think it's quite the opposite. I think that from the trauma that we have experienced, actually both in Israel and in Palestine, we will come closer to a point of being able to look at each other and understand that we have no choice but to make peace between ourselves.
That's incredibly hopeful, and I want to come back to it, because hope is sometimes the father of the wish, or vice versa, depending. And I'm going to ask you for some evidence, because I'm fundamentally skeptical. By nature, I'm fundamentally skeptical. And I hope you're right, but I want to talk a bit about why you're right, why you think you're right. But Francesca, sort of the same question. As you move among the Palestinians widely, do you think they think Israel's changing? You said they mostly have given up even thinking about Israel.
Yes, absolutely. You know, all the mixed initiatives that there were after, especially after the Oslo Accords, Israeli-Palestinian initiatives, you know, suddenly disappeared. I mean, right now, with a few exceptions, like Gershon, of course, you know, really, you don't have a Palestinian who wants to be, I don't know, if you ask for an interview, you know, you don't have a Palestinian who wants a joint interview with an Israeli, which means, you know, in the same page, the same questions, half page for the Israeli and half page for the Palestinian. I'm not speaking of a joint interview where, you know, you speak with both at the same time. No, just to share the same page, you know, in a newspaper. No, to share the same questions. No, it's totally, you know, basically, for Palestinians, it's like, you know, okay, it's, you know, this is what has been going on since 1948, and this is the end. They really see no future, which means they see for Gaza the next 6 months, 12 months, they see no agreement, you know, no ceasefire agreement coming, no real ceasefire agreement coming. They think that this hybrid, you know, this is not war, not peace, will go on for months. And there will be, you know, basically the annexation of the West Bank, which is what actually you can easily, you know, what you can easily watch, you know, on the ground, step by step, day by day. And, you know, the two-state solution, the one-state solution, there's nothing. I mean, the two-state solution are a problem of geography now, not even of politics, you know. After October 7th, when I would say, you know, most Palestinians, nearly all Palestinians, were completely drunk, you know, and were celebrating, you know, in the streets. We remember that, you know. Even the most moderate Palestinians were celebrating for October 7th, thinking that, you know, at least for once, Israelis had, you know, tried, you know, a little bit of what, you know, they experience every day. Well, now, and after October 7th, you know, in the following days, Palestinians said, it's now or never, no? It's now or never. And of course, they were expecting, you know, Arab states to come to their rescue. They were expecting the uprising of the West Bank and so on, and nothing. So it was now or never. And the answer after 1 year and a half now is never. So it's over. It's over.
Do you know leaders who, regardless of where they live or what they do, are changing the world? Leaders who are not content with what is and are working hard for what could be. Leaders with both a demonstrated track record and the potential for continued impact. Leaders whose work is innovative, courageous, rooted in universal values, and global in approach or implication. If so, please nominate them for the Telberg SNF Eliasson Global Leadership Prize at telbergprize.org. The nominations will be open from March 15th to May 15th. Thank you. Gershon, I read something you wrote recently. We have very few leaders on both sides who actually say and believe what is necessary for us to move out of 100 years of war, death, and destruction. Francesca just said you are one of the few Israelis who are thinking in a more positive way, are trying to work towards something. Let me not ask about you, but let me ask about why Israel's not producing leaders, and Francesca, you more or less said the same thing, why the Palestinians aren't producing leaders that indeed might be able to break out of this cycle. Leadership matters.
I think that there's a leadership crisis around the world. It's not only in Israel and Palestine. We're just part of a larger phenomenon that's going on. Our politics in Israel are very nasty and dirty. And they have become more so over the years. And we have Netanyahu now, who's the longest serving prime minister in the history of Israel. If you look at the Palestinian side, in 100 years, the Palestinians have had three leaders, Haj Amin Hussein, Yasser Arafat, and Mahmoud Abbas. And all three of them have failed their people in terms of providing them with a better life, with freedom and dignity and security and prosperity. We have a failed leadership in Israel with a political system that's become more and more autocratic, and decent people don't enter politics anymore. But we're at a point of crisis in both societies, and the crisis is the birth of opportunities. And we are going to see new leaders rise in Palestine and in Israel. It's inevitable.
Why is it inevitable if it hasn't happened for 100 years after crisis after crisis after crisis?
Because we have never reached the point of crisis that we're currently in. This is the worst situation that both the Israeli and the Palestinian people have been in our history. This is worse than the Nakba of 1948 for the Palestinians. And this is the biggest crisis that the Israelis or the Jewish people have faced since the Holocaust. And it has to give birth to new people and new ideas that are going to take over the society. We see it happening already from civil society who saved Israel after October 7th because our government was dysfunctional. And we see that civil society that led the 40 weeks of demonstrations for democracy in Israel and the civil society that's taken over the campaign to bring the hostages home and end the war. And in Palestine, you have a 90-year-old president who's in the 19th year of a four-year term who enjoys no legitimacy. And Hamas has lost all of its legitimacy in Gaza, in the place where it governs, perhaps the more popular in the West Bank right now out of, I don't know, some stupid reason. Palestinians will eventually blame Hamas for the disaster that they brought to the Palestinian people. I have no doubt about it. And I just want to comment also something that's unseen right now is I hear from my colleagues in the peace building field, from organizations like ALMEP, the Alliance for Middle East Peace, which represents an umbrella organization of more than 120 Israeli and Palestinian organizations, that they have recently, in the last weeks, in the last 2 months, seen an enormous growth of the numbers of Palestinians who are coming to them and saying they want to be involved and engaged. So while it appears at the level that we see on our television screens and read on our newspapers that everyone's living in despair, the majority of Palestinians maybe who want to leave have no place to go and they're staying here. And the more this becomes a national issue, the more they will hold on to their rights to be in their homeland. And the same is true for Israelis. We have a brain drain of good quality people who have the ability to leave, who will leave. But we will have, after this war, about 7.5 million Israeli Jews and 7.5 million Palestinian Arabs living in the land between the river and the sea. And after more than 100 years of killing each other, we have to stop and say we cannot continue doing this. And I believe this is what we're going to see in the not too distant future. And it will be a result of change of leadership. And it will happen either in Israel or in Palestine first. And that will have a dialectic kind of impact on the other side. All we need are new voices to be loud and clear and heard that recognize the national legitimacy of the other people to be here. And we will see changes take place.
Francesca, what do you think?
There is exactly the same leadership crisis, you know, on the Palestinian side. And this is absolutely, you know, the main issue. The point is, you know, as Gershon said, Palestinians last went to the polls in 2006. I mean, it's beyond imagination. And Mahmoud Abbas is 89 years old, and the median age in Palestine is 21 point something, you know. And Mahmoud Abbas has no legitimacy whatsoever. And he's not the president. I mean, he's like a king, you know. He not only, you know, his term expires, you know, basically in 2009. The point is, he rules completely alone. Even, you know, in the small circle around him, nobody knows what he's doing, what he's deciding, or he's not informing anyone. And the point is, in all these years, the Palestinian civil society has been, you know, weakened. Of course, you know, there is the occupation. So, I mean, getting organized under occupation where, you know, basically even meeting is complicated in the West Bank. I mean, meeting all together, you know, is complicated. So the occupation, first and foremost. But then, you know, is the PA, basically, you know, the PA police. I mean, this is an authoritarian regime. So if you want, you know, to tackle this leadership crisis in you know, on the Palestinian side, well, we have an answer. I mean, the European Union, because the European Union is today the largest external funder of the Palestinian Authority. So Palestinians desperately want elections. You know, so for so many years, Palestinians said, well, national unity, you know, comes first. We shouldn't have elections now because, you know, with Fatah, Hamas, we would probably end up, you know, with civil war or street fighting. No, now, I mean, after October 7th, the idea is elections now, no matter what, you know. And the point is, the Palestinian Authority, this Palestinian Authority, really, I'm speaking not so much as the institution, but, you know, as Mahmoud Abbas and, you know, the cronies around him. And basically, it's a business. I mean, it's about business, basically. And the European Union should absolutely, you know, demand change, you know, and nothing, sanctions. I mean, this is really an authoritarian regime. I mean, when I speak with members of the European parliaments or members of the European governments, you know, they don't realize, you know, authoritarian regime means, you know, that in the West Bank and, of course, in Gaza, where there is or there was Hamas, I mean, you can speak. When I tried a few months ago, before October 7th, to write a story on the PA, I mean, and that I ended up, you know, locked down and, I mean, detained by the PA. And, I mean, when I try now, you know, in the past weeks to cover Jenin, where the PA, not only, you know, the IDF is killing Palestinians, shooting at children, you know, we were basically, you know, nothing. They point a gun at you and they just say, go away or I will kill you. And this is the PA. And this is what our governments, I mean, European governments, are paying for. So, I mean, it makes no sense to keep saying there is a leadership crisis in, you know, in Palestine. Yes, we know that. And we are one of the main cause of this leadership crisis because Palestinians want change. And we are basically, we Europeans, we are preventing change.
I think it's not only the European Union, it's also the Arab neighbors. I know that both King Abdullah and President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in Egypt agree that Mahmoud Abbas needs to go. He needs to be pushed aside. Yet at the Arab League summit meeting in Cairo, the plan that they put for Gaza put the PA in charge of Gaza after a six-month period of having some kind of independent government. Now, I know that what they are thinking is that they need to put pressure on Mahmoud Abbas to appoint a prime minister who has authority, who would take the power away from Mahmoud Abbas, and they want that prime minister to be someone who has legitimacy on the ground in the West Bank and Gaza. This is what they're trying to do. But they're a bit timid about confronting Mahmoud Abbas, which is unexplainable. It is the legitimacy that Mahmoud Abbas has gotten from the international community that has enabled him to stay in power for so many years. And it's really time for him to go. And I say that as a friend of the Palestinian people, is this is what they say every day. And it's bewildering that there are no real demonstrations against Abbas. It's part of the control that they have over the society. But it's also a sign of some kind of sense of hopelessness that Palestinians have experienced for too many years. But they really need to rise up against their own government. Of course, they're against the occupation. That's the number one target of Palestinian anger and pain and disdain. But the occupation isn't going to end until there's a legitimate Palestinian leadership who's also advocating a program of peace with Israel, because Israel is here to stay and the Palestinians are here to stay, and there needs to be a confrontation of reality. I like the way that the Palestinian scholar in Rashid Khalidi put it in his last book about 100 years war on Palestine. He said, we as Palestinians will never be able to recognize the legitimacy of Zionism, but we have to recognize the existence of Israel. This is a fact that's not going to go away, and we have to deal with that. The Jewish people have a connection to the land of Israel. We can't deny that as Muslims.
Gershon, I know you're optimistic, partially out of hope, partially out of need, I think. How do we imagine getting to this better place?
I think that, first of all, we have a responsibility in Israel to get rid of our leader, to get rid of the Netanyahu regime and the people who surround him. And we're working on that. That will happen. There's no question in my mind that Netanyahu is history. He'll hang on for as long as he can. But I would not discount the region, and the regional aspect of what's going on here is crucial right now, particularly the Saudis, who, while Mohammed bin Salman might say he doesn't really care that much about the Palestinians, he also says that his people do. The Saudis cannot move forward on normalization with Israel that both Saudi Arabia and Israel are interested in without guaranteeing the existence of a Palestinian state. And this is a key. The Abraham Accords and the desire of Israel to expand them the power of the politics now being played by the Saudis, who have created the Global Alliance for the Implementation of the Two-State Solution, with 90 countries participating in it, in meetings that took place in New York, in Riyadh, in Brussels, in Oslo, the next one in Cairo, and after that in Paris. There is a global movement which is going to impact. But more, I can talk specifically about the work that I've done with my Palestinian colleague, Samer Sinjalawi, in bringing together two former leaders, an Israeli and a Palestinian, Ehud Olmert, former prime minister, and Nasser Kidwa, former foreign minister, who happens to be very legitimate in Palestine, former foreign minister, the nephew of Yasser Arafat, someone who's living in exile now because in 2021 he put together a list to run in the elections that Mahmoud Abbas canceled that was supported by Marwan Barghouti. Marwan's wife Fadwa was number two in Nasser's list. And they came together and wrote up a position paper, a prospect for the future, a vision of a two-state solution with parameters that they detailed in their paper. And they presented this already now to more than 39 heads of state and foreign leaders. We had our first meeting of bringing it back to Israelis and Palestinians a couple of weeks ago in Larnaca. We're planning a meeting of 1,000 Israelis and Palestinians, which will take place hopefully in Paris in June, alongside of the summit meeting between Mohammed bin Salman and Macron, at the time of the meeting of the Global Alliance also. So there is movement on the ground, and we have a vision, and we know where we need to get to, but we have a lot of work to do to get there.
Francesca, as you talk to people, as you interview people, as you work on your various projects, do you sense a willingness to think differently about Palestine, about Israel?
There is a major stumbling block, which is, you know, Hamas, the future of Hamas, the role of Hamas. And everybody knows that that's the problem for the long-term ceasefire moving with the reconstruction of Gaza. That's the problem, but no one is basically addressing it, seriously addressing it. And especially Palestinians, you know. Of course, you know, Hamas we don't even know what is the leadership of Hamas now, and you know, it seems to be a little bit adrift, you know, but still it exists, and of course, you know, it can change, you know, but it will exist, you know, it's not going to disappear. And the point is, what as a foreigner, you know, it's really not easy for me to understand is that all Palestinians, basically, nearly all Palestinians, including Palestinians who are really against Hamas, you know, are not willing to discuss or to include, you know, the future of Hamas, the role of Hamas in, you know, in the negotiations, you know. And they basically say, this is not your business. This is not anyone's business. This is Palestinian business, no? And then you have Hamas saying this is, you know, armed resistance or, you know, basically military action. It's our own business. We are not going to discuss it, not even with Palestinians, you know, or with our other Arab countries, you know. I mean, in the past, if I think the second intifada, Marwan Barghouti, of course, but if I think of, you know, armed resistance everywhere in the world, you know, or military action, I mean, it's coordinated with political action, otherwise, you know, means nothing, which is, you know, what Palestinians say now, mainly even in the West Bank, you know, they basically blame Hamas for, you know, basically they blame the fighters for fighting without a political strategy, outside of a political framework. Now, this is what we have to basically to address, and we have to help Palestinians addressing it, because Palestinians seemed unable basically to discuss about Hamas and to understand that, okay, I mean, freedom for Palestinians come with security for Israelis. I mean, the two, I mean, have to come together, you know. And Palestinians totally forgot this second term, you know, of the equation, the security of Israelis, you know, because they see Israelis so much more powerful, you know. And they totally forgot that, you know, October 7 is there to remind all of us that no matter, you know, how much your army is technologically advanced, you know, you will always have, you know, some paragliders, you know, that can bypass, you know, an Iron Dome. So that's the point. And I think this has to be our role, you know, to support Palestinians, not only, you know, in renewing their leadership, but also addressing, you know, this issue of Hamas. Otherwise, there is no way to move forward.
Why don't we end there? You both have made the point that the only positive way forward is if, I think Gershon would insist, when new leadership emerges. Maybe things are so awful now, so hopeless now, that Palestinians as well as Israelis will simply demand different leaders who have both the will and the capacity to learn how to live together. Inshallah. Since so much of this conversation was about leadership, let me take a moment for a commercial. The Telberg Foundation is now accepting nominations for our annual Telberg Global Leadership Prize. You can nominate someone at telberg-snf-eliassonprize.org. Francesca Gershon, thank you for this conversation, and thank you both for sharing your views with our audience today.
Grazie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Thinking for a New World. I'm Alan Stoga, podcast host, and I look forward to your joining our next conversation. Remember, tell us what you think at telbergfoundation.org.